I'd like to introduce Patty Lovera. She's the Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch and coordinates the organization's food policy team. Patty has a bachelor's degree in environmental science from Lehigh University and a master's degree in environmental policy from the University of Michigan. Before joining Food and Water Watch, she was the Deputy Director of the Energy and Environment Program at Public Citizen and a researcher at the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. So we've heard about several different trade policies' impact on several different sectors of the economy. So I'm going to talk about one particular agreement that's in development right now with a specific focus on a major food that we import in the U.S., which is seafood. So I don't have any significant disclosures to make. And so we in the U.S. are importing more of our food, period, across the board. The FDA has trouble putting a number on it. They say it's about 15% of what we eat, but that varies widely when we look at different types of food. And seafood and fish, it's much, much, much higher. So some folks have estimated that as much as 80% of the fish and seafood that Americans are eating is imported. And so this is just meant to be a little bit of a timeline. The important, you don't have to look at everything. The important thing to notice is the B up there for pounds. We're talking billions of pounds of fish and seafood that come into the U.S., and the number is rising, and all of the various little boxes are just different trade agreements. Many of them are, you know, single country free trade agreements. Sometimes it's something bigger. In terms of food in general and what Americans are eating, 2001, somehow these slides didn't travel too well and the years got eaten, but there were years down here when China joined the WTO, which is 2001. In general, we've seen more food coming in from China, including fish and seafood. So the important note on this slide, which lost its years, is that the trends are going up. I just want to talk a little bit this morning about something that is kind of looming in the world of food policy, especially when we're talking about fish and seafood, which is the pending Trans-Pacific Partnership. So there are 12 countries that are already in the negotiations for this trade agreement. So you can see it's, you know, North America, Peru, and then Australia, New Zealand, you know, and in several countries in Asia. There's some notable absences, but that doesn't mean they won't join the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So India, China, South Korea, Thailand, Philippines, and Taiwan are thinking about it. And China, when we talk about food production and when we talk about fish production, could be an even bigger player in this. But when we're looking at these countries, we're already bringing in quite a bit of fish and seafood from the 12 countries, just the 12 countries that are already thinking about being in the TPP. So, and then the trend is that it's rising. So this is millions of pounds of fish and seafood already coming in from countries that are part of this treaty negotiation.
Is that the year on the bottom?
Yes, and the years went away. So it got to 2012, so we're going about 20 years there, and the numbers are rising from these countries already before we have this trade agreement. And so this is just to look at some specific types of fish and seafood. So we're talking about almost 20% of the shrimp, 40% of the salmon, half of crab and catfish, and almost 75% of lobsters are coming in from these 12 countries that are thinking about the TPP. And so we'll just look really quickly at a couple of them. Again, all of my years went away. They're somewhere on the internet. They were here when I started. These trends, you know, just to show this is across the board, and most of these products were increasing more. So it's not just more pounds, it's a bigger share of what Americans are eating. So it's not just more pounds of shrimp that are coming in from these countries, they're taking up more market share of the shrimp that we're eating. So the pie got bigger, but their share of the pie has grown as well. Similar phenomenon in catfish. For those lucky people that get to follow farm policy and the farm bill, we're having knockdown, drag-out fights about catfish policy, which seems really obscure. But we do produce catfish in this country. The domestic U.S. catfish industry has just been decimated by imports. And so there's been fights for 10 or 15 years now about what to do about imported catfish because it's growing so quickly over the last about 10 years. Things range from labeling programs to different inspection standards, all to try to get a handle on how much is coming in. And there is, in this case, a domestic industry that's being displaced. This is the last example we use, is for crab. Similar trends, we're increasing a lot of this. I think this is one that always shocks people. They think crab comes from Maryland or it comes from North Carolina. And it does sometimes, but much of it is coming in from countries that would be part of the TPP. So the notable thing, if you're here and you know enough about trade agreements to be here, you, this won't be a shock, but to the general public, if they've heard of trade agreements, they think they're about numbers. You know, how much of something can come in, tariffs, quotas, you know, we let in your steel and you take our tires. They're used to that kind of thinking about trade agreements. The TPP takes it up a notch in terms of what's on the table, and it really is increasingly about the rules, about the standards, about what countries can regulate, what they can say about how things are produced. And that's incredibly important for a public health arena when we're talking about food and when we're talking about how seafood is produced. Most of the fish and the seafood that's coming in is aquacultured. It is raised in, you know, a farmed system. It is not wild caught. And there is a lot to be concerned about when we're talking about health standards and the safety of the practices used. And the practices differ by country. So when we're talking about a trade agreement like TPP, where the standards themselves are on the table, there's a lot, we think there's an enormous amount at stake. So it's been a theme, I think, already today. When you're talking about these potential trade agreements, we're often talking about secrecy, and TPP is no exception to that. We don't know what's in it. We don't get to see it as the public. We've actually talked to members of Congress whose staff weren't allowed to see it yet. So it's being negotiated in secret. There is a council of, I think it's 600 companies that get to see the text, but the public does not. So, but we know that there are chapters on food safety, and there's lots of code words like regulatory coherence, which in our minds is code for dumbing down standards so that products can flow more easily. And that, when it comes to fish and seafood, that means they're flowing in to the U.S. So you see a lot of words like harmonization, equivalence. These are all meant to drive down standards to the lowest common denominator so stuff can travel more freely and these pesky rules and regulations don't get in the way. So countries who sign on to the TPP are going to bring their rules into compliance with whatever is negotiated as the new standard across all of these countries. So we're extremely worried about food safety standards. In my personal life, as the rest of my job at Food and Water Watch, I spend a lot of time thinking about food labels. These always come into play in trade agreements. And if we're talking about fish, if you go to the fish counter and you see the little stand in there that says product of this country, farm raised or wild caught, that's not because the companies love giving us that information. We made them do that by changing the U.S. law to require that labeling, and we are currently defending that labeling in trade negotiation or at the WTO and now in U.S. court because of trade challenges to that law. So labeling can become a barrier to trade that is on the table as we negotiate these things. So when it comes to the safety piece of seafood, the FDA, again, my years are gone. All the years have gone. We don't have very much safety net for American consumers. The last number, the 90, I believe, was a 2011 number. That's what they asked for, the FDA asked for dedicated inspectors to look at seafood imports. So that's 90 full-time equivalent inspectors for billions of pounds of product. So that takes us to an incredibly high average of how much each inspector is looking at. Each inspector is not looking at 57 million pounds of product. Often they're looking at a computer screen about what shipments are coming through. One shipment might have lots and lots of pounds. They're not actually inspecting this product. We don't have much of a safety net as consumers of this product here. And that goes really across the board for all of the FDA-inspected foods, which are produce, seafood, processed foods. The USDA does meat and poultry. They also have border inspection. They do a little better. They get to like 9 or 10%. The FDA gets to about 1% of looking at imported food. So this is the last year here where there was no red. The red is how much is laboratory, and it gets any laboratory treatment, any inspection, or any testing for drug residues, for pathogens like salmonella, anything that's beyond just looking at it. Some years doesn't even happen. The most recent year we could get there was 2007. We've had to fight with the FDA perennially to get any data on this. At one point we sued them to try to get this data. We're in a perennial FOIA battle with them to try to get this information. So at best, you know, you were looking at maybe 2% in the early 2000s getting any kind of inspection. Less than 1% of that saw any kind of laboratory testing, and some years there was no laboratory testing. When they do laboratory testing, problems are found. So we see things. The biggest reason the load might be rejected or a country might be put on an import alert, which means we're going to look at their stuff more carefully, range from filth, spoilage, histamine, which is an allergen. That's why a lot of people are allergic to seafood, salmonella, and then drug residues, drugs that are not supposed to be used in producing fish, if they were being raised in this country, it wouldn't be allowed. We're commonly seeing, and it goes with certain countries, have a track record of using certain drugs that aren't allowed here. So we need, and that's when they do this very tiny amount of inspection, they do find things. So this is showing, this is just number of refusals. So this was, 88 shipments were refused, 58 shipments were refused, and that's with that tiny inspection rate just from these TPP countries. There is something going on. It's not, we're not inspecting just because we like inspectors. When they actually look, they do find things. So we're often seeing illegal antibiotics, fungicides, chemicals, and other just kind of other assorted drugs that aren't supposed to be used. If you were doing it in a U.S. facility, you wouldn't be allowed to use it, and the residues are coming in with the product. And so this is just an example of some of the things that they find, some of the things that we're worried about that we think make a real difference about where the food comes from and what regulatory system it's being produced under. So some of the antibiotics that we hear a lot when we do get data, when we do get inspections, these are the kinds of things they find. So antibiotics like chloramphenicol, which has been potential carcinogen, very concerning, used incredibly limited ways because there's so many side effects. It's commonly found in shrimp coming in from different countries. Nitrofurans, quinolones, other antibiotics, and either at best we're worried about antibiotic resistance from overusing these, at worst the drugs themselves might have side effects or are potential carcinogens. It's a range of aquaculture products they're found in. And then there's additional chemicals that are used like malachite green, gentian violet as antifungals. That's what the AF stands for, is antifungal. And we're very concerned about exposure to those. They're not supposed to be used in producing these foods, and they're found regularly. So there was one study that came out recently that looked at 252 facilities across different Southeast Asian countries, and then they also looked at the supply stores that sell the feed and sell the supplies that go into these into this industry. And in particular, they saw some good news. They did see some levels going down across the board, but they actually pulled out the Vietnamese catfish industry and somewhat the shrimp industry there, in particular for looking at what they kind of singled them out in this study to say that they were seeing antibiotics, disinfectants, and parasiticides at higher levels in Vietnam than in other places. And they just made a list of the various things that they found which would not be allowed by FDA standards in U.S. production. It shouldn't be coming in. So this was done 2 years ago. They published the paper this year, and it just shows the extent of the problems. It's not just one drug, or just one practice or just one country. It's pretty universally acknowledged that there is a problem out there. And this is before we have a trade agreement that lowers standards and makes it easier to import. So this is what we're worried about. This is just one piece of the TPP that we're worried about, but it is a major one because of the countries involved and because this is such a major food commodity that we bring in from these countries. So in terms of the TPP itself, and I think our next speaker is going to talk more about it, but the moment, in terms of advocacy and thinking about the TPP, trade agreements don't pass in the U.S. They don't pass Congress unless Congress gives the president something called trade promotion authority, right, which is a straight up or down vote. And the Congress can't amend them. They can't fiddle with them. The only way trade agreements pass is if they can be voted up or down. So the real moment for the TPP and another trade agreement, which is pending across a different ocean with European countries, a U.S.-EU trade agreement, which is not quite as far along, but there's similar attacks on standards there, similar style in terms of being about regulations. The key moment for fighting those is actually the moment of Congress deciding whether or not they will give the president trade promotion authority. The common, easier way to remember that is they'll talk about fast-track authority, so whether or not you give fast-track authority to get these trade agreements through. That will be kind of the moment in terms of the policy levers that drive that allow these agreements to pass or not, and that moment is coming. We just don't know when. So in terms of folks getting involved, we have a lot of information about trade agreements on Food and Water Watch's website. We have some other things about these specific seafood things. I'm also happy to send these slides to anyone who wants them with the actual years on them if you need the data. There are other groups like Public Citizen, Citizens Trade Campaign, who will be spreading the word and talking about this moment when Fast Track is coming, which would be great to have the public health community really engaging in, because this is just one sliver of all of the issues and even just one sliver of the foods that will be in play when we're talking about the TPP. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Patty. That was a really eye-opening and daunting presentation about the TPP, and hopefully the folks are paying attention to that coming down the pipeline. So our next speaker is John Stewart. He's with Corporate Accountability International, the director of the Challenge Big Tobacco campaign. He works with government delegates, allied NGOs, and activists around the world to challenge Big Tobacco's interference in the implementation of the world's first corporate accountability and public health treaty on tobacco. He also coordinates a global network of NGOs dedicated to ensuring public health policy from corporate interference called the Network for Accountability of Tobacco Transnationals. I'll pass it over to you.